Well, what's up, class? This is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth. We're at block height 650,276, and the current price is 10,736. Take it away, Nick.
Before I start, this is Nick Cantmine, and we have a quick word from our sponsor. Our sponsor is Citadel 21, and they're a Bitcoin cultural zine that displays the best of the best written content by the Bitcoin Taco Plebs for the Bitcoin Taco Plebs. You can read their articles online for free or even purchase physical copies of all your favorite volumes, but you got to be quick because they only have a limited amount and they sell out extremely quick. They are limited to 1,000 per volume, and I'm pretty sure both of their volumes that they've released have already sold out. So you got to be ready to get the third one. You got to be quick. And follow their Twitter for all the details leading up to that. They allow anyone and everyone to submit articles, so if you're eager to write something, I highly recommend you do it. Check out their website at citadel21.com, and their link will be in the description. But now getting on to the show for today, we have our guest, BTC Viking, aka Eric, who's going to talk about low time preference. So, Eric, what's up?
What's up?
How's it going, dude? It's we're really happy to have you here. This is one of my favorite topics in all of Bitcoin, as it's a great lifestyle to live. You can really create massive wealth through it, and it teaches you a lot. I think it helps you mature as a person, and I'm really excited for to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, hey Nick. First, I'm very good. Thank you guys for having me. You and Optimist. I'm excited as well to talk about it. One of my favorite topics, like, you know, since Bitcoin came to my life and I went down the rabbit hole, like basically everything in my life was kind of questioned, you know, behind that background. I feel most Bitcoiners can share that experience.
I know I can. I know I can share that experience. My life has done a complete 180.
Same.
I feel like, at least for me, a lot of my habits or bad habits, you know, that I would describe as having a higher time preference, I was able to, you know, identify, and most of them, you know, not all of them, but most of them changed for the better and for something at least cheaper that allows me at the end of the month to stack some more sats, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, yeah, my life has completely, you know, I used to spend money, like, I used to get paid for whether it was working a job or doing an odd job or something, and the first thing that was on my mind is, man, like, what cool thing am I going to buy? Like, you know, whether it's big or small, like, I want to spend this money, but after learning low time preference in Bitcoin, it's like, man, I don't want to spend this money on anything that's not, you know, more sats going in my wallet, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. No, you're delaying instant, or you're delaying your gratification, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're betting on your future self for a discount, so you do not spend the money now, and you invest it in sats, and to the point where you are going to spend it, you're probably going to double think about it, you know? Because it's like, you came so far, do you want to spend this money now?
Mm-hmm. So why don't you jump into detail about some of the stuff in your personal life that has led you down this path into this decision?
Yeah, and so in general, I think we can talk about what low time preference entitles, you know, or especially what low time preference as a lifestyle entitles, which is basically, you know, not just delaying the gratification or your instant want for like a Starbucks coffee, but things in your everyday planning that may change. Like, you know, when you're an office person and you tend to go to the coffee place, which, you know, Starbucks is the place between work and home. So it's exactly their branding, and you spend those $5 every day. you know, change of habit or low time preference would be to plan for that habit every day for the next day. You know, you're going to brew your coffee at home, you pay 5 cents per cup and not $5.
And the money you save is just, it over time, it adds up more and more and more. I remember when I first started studying this stuff, this guy wasn't into Bitcoin, but the story was that he, every single day on his way home from work, he would stop at the gas station and pick up like a soda and some candy, like every single day. And he stopped doing that and instead put his money into something. Like, I think he was buying gold and silver, or I think it was just gold. And over time, like, instead of wasting his money, he was saving it more and more and more. And I don't remember the exact amount of money he saved up over a certain period of time, but it was pretty good from what I remember. And I just know if he would have put that into Bitcoin, it would have been so much more better.
Man, yeah, that's exactly what it is, no? Like, the only thing I regret is in my life before Bitcoin that I didn't have this, you know? Like, I mean, all of us, maybe we had like someone in our life who said some things like, don't you want to save some stuff? Don't you want to do that, you know? Why do you spend money on clothes, or why do you spend money on your car and this and that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think, yep. Bitcoin is just the ultimate vehicle, or the ultimate vehicle to understand low time preference, and maybe even further to get introduced to the magic of compounding interest.
It's the ultimate saving technology, is the way I see it. There's nothing better than it. You can't save your money in dollars, because then you're just losing money. You can save value in, let's say, the stock market or real estate, but, you know, one could argue, do you really own that? You know, in stocks, you got to put your money with, like, a broker and, you know, online, and trust that nothing bad happens, or, you know, unless you have, like, the physical thing in your hands, the way I see it is you don't really own it. And with Bitcoin, you don't have to ask for anyone's permission to do whatever you want to do with it. It's completely yours, and you use it how you want to use it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're usually so many spaces removed from really owning the thing, no? Like, if you buy a commodity on the stock market, you own, like, some legal right to the paper that owns the legal right to the company that owns the material, or, you know, the rights to another company that owns the commodity itself. And with Bitcoin, it's the first, I feel like it's the first time really holding it. I can't say I really held like a big chunk of gold ever, like something higher than an ounce in my hand. So I would say, like, owning Bitcoin this way is like the only asset that is just like right at your fingertips.
What are your thoughts on this, Optimist?
I mean, personally, I didn't own anything before Bitcoin. You know, like, I've never, to be honest, been much of a saver. I didn't think about, like, buying stocks, or, you know, I'd never had money to buy assets. I've heard about gold, and it was like, yeah, that's cool, but, you know, what am I going to do with a chunk of gold? I can barely feed myself. And then I figured out about, you know, like, low time preference, read the Bitcoin Standard, and then just followed all our friends on Twitter. And, you know, the longer you go down the rabbit hole, the more this idea just starts to penetrate your behaviors. And so you start, you know, judging your purchases and your consumer habits, and you start to realize where, you know, like, the hole is in your wallet and the leaky drain is. And so you start adjusting your behavior. And then once you do that, you just become obsessed with freaking owning Bitcoin and buying Bitcoin. And, you know, everything you do is like, okay, should I own Bitcoin or should I buy this fucking candy? You know, you're like, $3 for a Snickers or fucking, you know, 30,000 sats. And you're like, goddamn, 30,000 sats sounds so much better. And so it's just funny how, like catching the Bitcoin bug fundamentally changes your behavior, because now I'm like a saver. You know, I still, like Viking said, like I still haven't fully fleshed out all of my high time preference behaviors. And, you know, like I have, I guess I'd have like a little pocket change where I just like YOLO and just go into like my nihilistic behaviors. But for the most part, it's like, all right, you know, the first part of my paychecks or any money that's coming in is like, okay, first and foremost, take a certain percentage out and buy Bitcoin, and then the rest, pay your bills, and then the rest, do whatever the fuck you want to do. But as long as you got that Bitcoin first, then I'm pretty okay with like my spending habits. So like, yeah, I've never owned anything besides Bitcoin. And even now, when I talk to friends that are into stock markets and stuff, I'm like, it just doesn't appeal to me. It's like Bitcoin's the only thing I want to own.
That's interesting, something you said. You know, I remember researching like a ton, like, you know, tips on how to create wealth, tips on how to get rich. You know, you talk to rich people and ask them how they did it. And literally everything I found online and everything I talked to in person said, when you get paid, pay yourself first. And that's exactly what you just said you do. You get your paycheck and immediately allocate some of that for savings, and you pay yourself first. And then the rest of it you set aside for, you know, whatever life expenses you need. And then, you know, whatever else gives you joy. And then, you know, probably the rest maybe even goes back into Sats.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like a good book on that is The Richest Man in Babylon. I think like most every one of our friends has read it. But to the people out there, if you've never heard of the book, it's a pretty short book. And it's essentially saying that, you know, like generational wealth is built by paying yourself first.
I feel that's a good example, like reading books for like in the Bitcoin community. I feel a lot of people, or most, are reading books and actively reading books and sharing books. And that's another example of low time preference. I have friends and also people in the family like that prefer to, you know, play video games and have this instant rush of endorphins and stuff, you know. But it takes some more work, for example, to read a book. It's, again, something of a lower time preference, you know. And I feel amongst Bitcoiners, you're always amongst a little more civilized people that have some stuff to say, some ideas to exchange.
Yeah, like, you know, when going off the thing you said about like video games and stuff, like it could be video games, it could be binge watching Netflix, you know, spending hours on TikTok. It's just non-educational stuff that's going to stimulate your brain for short-term entertainment. And over time, I feel like that's good stuff. Like, I think we should definitely have, you know, video games, Netflix, you know, funny apps on your phone and stuff. But too much of it, I think, can be a bad thing. And I think a lot of people are severely undereducated, and now it's like reading books is, in my opinion, the best way to educate yourself. Like, I love podcasts, but I soak up much more information via books, and I think that's something that's critically lacking in society today.
Yeah, but Optimus has been saying something nice that would lead over to something that I wanted to talk about, like regarding low time preference. That was what he was spending money on before Bitcoin, you know, and Bitcoin made him kind of expose the holes or leaks in his wallet. So I talked to Nick about that on the prior podcast. Like he said, I don't know who listened, but it was about clothes, like that I, or like Nick also, we talked about how to make some sats and selling clothes and selling stuff around the house, and that I had the idea that clothes actually are a cool gateway experience into Bitcoin, or have been for me, because I've been something of a sneakerhead. I've been collecting Jordans since I'm 15, I guess, and I have been lucky from the beginning, like before even knowing what kind of pairs were really cool or really desired on the reselling market. I kind of hit some good pairs, and I was always, you know, living in northern Germany. It's a little withering, like it's a little bit wet outside and dirty. And well, I don't like to wear all those sneakers that I was then buying. And it's I don't know if there's like experience for you can relate to like that, where you had like a similar universe, something like a reselling market, where the value of the product itself was defined by the limitation of a third party that was producing the shoe, and the reselling value on the market just exploded according to like a limited supply, like it is in Bitcoin, and in a high demand. And if Nike or Adidas decided to now re-release a sneaker, it was a very good example how that cut the value of every existing sneaker pair on the reselling market down.
Yeah. I was just gonna say I'm like the complete opposite. I've never been much of a sneakerhead. I get one pair of shoe and I wear them till they're done, and then I just throw them away. So yeah.
But I have such a pair too, you know?
For sure.
One thing I wanted to say is that reminds me. You know, you said, what's the point of even buying these sneakers if I can't even wear it because it's cold and rainy outside? And, you know, you don't want to spend a lot of money on sneakers and not even be able to wear them. And I remember my grandpa was telling me that, and he was showing me these pictures of this really nice BMW he used to own. And, you know, he took care of it, like kept pristine and everything. But he said it got to the point where he wouldn't even take it out if it was a cloudy day outside. Like, he did not want to risk any rain getting on it and, you know, messing up anything. I'm assuming like the paint or like, you know, getting it dirty in any way. And he's, yeah. After a while, he came to that realization of, like, I can't live like this. Like, you know, I can't let a car control, you know, when I drive it. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it's a vehicle with four wheels, and it gets you from point A to point B. So he sold it and, you know, I think he put his money into stocks or something. I don't remember exactly what he did, but that's just another version of your story, just in a different way.
Yeah, like, you know, a car is like always losing value, touching ground. Like, I mean, that's the same to the sneakers, but the sneakers still have like, if it's a rare pair, for example, like limited supply by Nike, and then some pair that, for example, is displaying all of Jordan's records to a certain point in time, then, you know, it's going to increase in value over time. And in a shoe that you bought for $120 is probably worth $1,800. And, you know, then suddenly Nike announces a release next week. And, you know, there's always the next release for a BMW. But for a sneaker that's made in 1989 one time, there's usually not a release in 2005. And that's just how you experience for me, that's so relatable to shitcoining, to re-releases, to the no proof of work, just instant copies. It's just a crazy, for me, like I told you afterwards, thinking about it after I had the Bitcoin perspective, I felt like that was my little introduction into all this inflation, fiat, and shitcoinery, basically.
Can I ask, how long were you a sneakerhead for? Like, I mean, buying and selling and trading them.
How long? Or what did you say?
How long? Like, how many years?
Probably 13 years. 14, 13 years.
Okay.
I mean, I'm 31 now. So, mm-hmm. And like, until like 3 years ago, or my last pair, maybe 4 years ago.
Okay. Optimist, yeah. You want
to say anything? I was just going to ask. So now is your sneaker budget just all going into sets?
Yeah, man, I haven't bought a sneaker for 4 years. I told Nick last time I haven't got a haircut for three, man. I'm doing the whole low time preference thing. I feel like if I need a haircut so bad, like my wife's gonna do it. There is no reason, especially in this situation right now, you know. I'm totally content.
Nice. So like, well, I just want to ask, like, 'cause I think new people that get into the space, they probably believe that it's just like in one moment, you know, your whole life changes and you're like all low time preference, you're all about living frugal. But I know personally that it's kind of like a slow evolution or slow transformation. And you start, you know, adjusting your behavior one by one. So, did you have just like this enlightening moment where you're like, oh, okay, like I need to fundamentally change all my behavior? Or is it just like slowly but surely you just kind of canceled out certain behaviors and stacked more sets?
For sure, it's like I want to say like I was always a guy who was easier to quit with things like from one day to the other, but I think in this is impossible. You don't even, I mean, like you said, you know, it takes some time to expose all the leaks and to even understand what the things are that you are doing that are so high time preference, that are creating those leaks, and you know. How low time preference has been playing a role in your life before. I mean, another example for like the magic of compounding interest or low time preference is working out. A lot of people are working out, right? They understand they have to go every day over a long time to achieve certain kind of things, but somehow they're not able to apply it to other things.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, it's like this might seem off topic, but like I used to smoke a fucking lot of weed, right? And now I don't, and it's basically because I'm trying to stack more sats. And it's crazy how, you know, good hard money can change your behavior for the better, and you become more healthier. And you know, like you said, we exercise now. Like I used to never exercise, dude. I was like, fuck it, I'm pretty skinny. Like, I'm good to go, you know. But now I do like prison workouts so that I can just get fit and be as fit as I can be. And so, it's crazy how just hoarding hard money fundamentally changes every behavior that you have, or at least you have some kind of like internal reflection on your behaviors, and you weigh them out. You're like, okay, am I willing, you know, am I willing to sacrifice this moment for whatever it is that I enjoy that much? And sometimes you are willing to, you know, bear the blunt or the brunt of what you're doing, but other times you're just like, I don't think this is worth it. And like, I personally don't know anything else that's done that in my life, so it's pretty amazing.
I got a question. Do you think it's hard for people to see that? And 'cause I think like you have to have a low time preference. I think you have to like start planning for the future and like know, or at least have like an idea of like something you want later in life, whether it be a lifestyle or like certain thing you want to buy or something like that. 'Cause I think like a lot of people don't see the need to save, don't see the need to invest, just 'cause they're so high time preference, they can't even see past, you know, the next week or next month or something. And a common trend with Bitcoiners is they seem to know what they want a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. I mean, like maybe not down to the exact detail, but they have like an image or a reality in their head that they're trying to build towards. Do you think like a lot of people who have high time preference don't have that, or what do you think their thought processes is?
I mean, you might be onto something there, because if you want it this way, our fiat, no matter if like euro or dollar, they kind of enable a high time preference behavior and thinking, no? And in the first place, they want you to exchange this claim onto market goods as soon as possible, you know. Otherwise, it's losing value. It's a shitty feeling, you know. You get paid once a month after you have been issuing the credit to your employer. You know, you start working the first day, and then for the next 30 days, basically you issue him credit, right, until he pays you, and then you get your money at the end of the month, and that's your claim towards the market and the goods towards the market, and that just breaks down over time and the last month pretty rapidly. So now you have this feeling of panic or fear of losing out, you know, or missing out, like somebody else is drinking the Coke quicker than you can, you know. Yeah. I think it enables this bad planning or less planning and high consumption.
Yeah. What do you think, Optimus?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, I'm just trying to think back to before I got into Bitcoin, and I can pretty much confidently tell you that I wasn't really planning too much into the future at all. I just kind of was like, go with the flow, you know, like, what's the best I can do within the next couple of weeks or whatever, like, what's some fun that I can have and enjoy my life as best as I can. And so it would be just like any money coming in is basically going out, and it's just all consumption. But I don't even think I understood the concept of, you know, like the dollar losing its value consistently. It was just kind of like an unspoken truth that you get money in, you know, consume it, you buy what you need to buy, and you try to live your life. And like, I knew inherently that it's not a sustainable way to go into my future. So like, I'm like with Viking, I'm more near his age than I am to you, Nick. So I think it's kind of like all the right pieces falling into place, finding Bitcoin, like how old I am, realizing that, shit, if I keep going along this route into the future, I'm not going to have a very good future when I'm older. And it's like, I'm not trying to work my ass off, you know, I'm not trying to slave away for the rest of my life. And so if I wanted to change things, you know, I have to fundamentally look at my behavior and change it. And so going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole is, finally, once I found like the Bitcoin only guys, do you realize that, you know, Bitcoin's the best savings technology. And if you want to have the future, if you want to have a good future, then you should be saving as much Bitcoin as humanly possible. And so I've definitely always been the person, you know, like, I want a good life when I'm older, you know, like, I don't want to be a fucking fiat slave and, you know, like, poor, living paycheck to paycheck. Like, I see those people around me, but I never had the, you know, the financial literacy to understand all these concepts growing up. It was just kind of like, oh, rich people are rich and, you know, poor people are poor. And then you realize, well, a lot of rich people have really good behavior, you know, to keep them rich. And so it's just a crazy, like, mirror. Like, Bitcoin will mirror back to you what you are, and you can only hide for it for so long. And so, you know, like, low time preference is the key to all this shit, but it's a hard perspective for people new coming into the space to understand, because our whole life is, you know, fiat culture. It's just like, get the money, spend the money, you know, like, why do you save in a dollar when it's stealing from you?
One thing I've noticed, that I've heard it constantly from everyone my age. My brother used to say it all the time. My friends used to say it all the time. And it was, I only have one life. I would rather be young and, you know, live life to the fullest, spend a ton of money now and get it out of my system. And then, you know, I'd rather, you know, not be old and grumpy and have a lot of money and can't do stuff. And like, while that sounds good, and it's like, yeah, that's reasonable, and you can definitely have fun in your youth, but you don't need to go 100K into credit card debt to have fun. And you don't need to slave away your late 20s, you know, your 30s, your 40s, and your 50s, you know, I feel like that's just a lie fiat culture tell people in fiat culture tell themselves to, you know, keep, you know, to like justify their bad financial behavior. So it's like, I've heard so many people say, like, I don't want to save in, you know, Bitcoin, or I don't want to save for my future because I'm too young. I got, you know, I got to spend money and live my life. But then it's like I see people in their late 20s, early 30s who are like, you know, very well off because they made smart decisions. And it's like those people aren't regretting not spending all that money in their youth. You know, like they're pretty damn happy that they didn't. And it's, I think there's like what we've been saying, there's just like that gap where like they haven't understood it yet. But once you do understand it, no matter, you know, what age you are, it's like all you can think about is like buying Bitcoin and saving and stacking sats for your future.
Absolutely. Yeah, Bitcoin is a perfect low time preference vehicle to understand it and to analyze your own behavior, you know. Like in the end, Bitcoin kind of lets you dream in terms of we all have an idea of what we are going to do with the Bitcoin when they hit this and this amount, you know, of whatever we calculate. And of course, that's wrong. Like later, we only need to calculate in sets, guys. But mm-hmm. I mean, everybody of us like has like this plan of like how he sees his future, like you guys said, you know, like now optimist thinks of not poor people stay poor, but like, what the fuck, I'm going to buy this amount of acres and I'm gonna have like, I don't know, a bison ranch and I'm gonna fucking sell meat to my neighbor, you know? It's fucking amazing.
Complete change in mentality. And I think a lot of people have the potential to become rich and wealthy, but they have this poor fiat mentality that keeps them down. And it's like, I know a lot of people, I mean, maybe not personally, but I've seen a lot of people online who went from poor, but they had a rich mentality. And over time, they completely flipped their situation to where they went from being poor to a great position financially.
Yeah. Do you guys know Bill Pulte? Or Bill Pulte on Twitter?
I don't think I do.
Is that the guy who gives a lot of Bitcoin out or something?
Yeah, I think he gives a lot of cash out, at least like before the Tales from the Crypt guys were taking and talking about Cash App and Bitcoin was a thing. He was always using Cash App to give away money on Twitter. And he was always like asking for comments about people that need money and was always comments like, I can't pay the rent at the end of the month and this and that, you know, and he was just giving away money. And I always like thought to myself, like, this is so fucked, you know, especially because you, Optimist, mentioned the richest man of Babylon. Like one lesson in that book is not only to save 1/10 of your paycheck, but it's also that the to whom the money comes easy will also lose the money easy, mm-hmm. you know. So like what he actually does is enables a high time preference behavior, because these people that he's giving money to fix like this month rent, they will need the same money next month.
Yeah, it's like teach a man how to fish, not just give him fish.
Exactly.
And I just wanted to add, like, you guys reminded me of like this saying that I always tell myself of, like, you know, capital accumulation builds society. And so I was definitely one of those people growing up with the miseducation or the misperspective that, you know, rich people are exploiting, you know, the what do you call it, the workers of the world or whatever, like on some commie shit. But like once you realize that the people that are providing the most value to the world are the ones that have the most amount of money for the most part, then you start to think in terms of like, okay, like what value can I provide the world? And then you start to become a producer versus just being a taker. Like you're saying, you know, there's a point in your mind where the flip just like this it just switches in your mind, and you realize, like, okay, I can't just be a consumer. I can't just take from everything that I come in contact with. You know, there's a point where I should give some value to it. And I know that me and Nick have gone down that route where we just constantly think, like, how do we provide the most value to people? And, you know, like, what value can I provide to people? I sit here a lot and think about, like, okay, what value can I provide to people? You know, like, what am I good at? Like, how can I spread this message or whatever? How do, you know, I spread anything that I'm good at and provide as much value to people in the world? And I think that ties into the low time preference, because it's like, to build up something, it takes time. And so if you're going to build and compound on your personal value, like, you have to invest in yourself, and you're not going to get the results, you know, instantly, but in time, everything, you know, like, you put in the effort, you know, proof of work, and it's going to show up. So I think that's one of the things that fundamentally needs to switch in people's minds. It's like, okay, like, stop taking it and think of, like, what can I give, you know, like, what value can I provide to people, and what am I good at? And, you know, double down on all that instead of worrying about, you know, your weaknesses and what's broken with you and your woe is me story and the victim tale we tell each other, or tell ourselves rather.
That's pretty close. It, like, ask not what Bitcoin can do for you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's pretty great. Yeah, I think the same. I often sit around too, sitting with my wife, thinking about what I can do, what she wants to do to provide for, like, Bitcoin, and, like, you know, what you... It kind of makes you taking the time to figure out what you actually are good at, or whatever talented it good at, or what you want to learn and do, you know? Learning to code and then which direction to go. And for example, you know, it's just a stupid example, very shallow now, like, regarding Bitcoin, but in any case, it's just like you said, you know, it's pretty close to the Bitcoin standard, where he talks about low time preference, and first is Linda is fishing like Harry, but then she builds a fishing rod, and that goes so long until she and her, like, family are so much more productive than Harry's family that's still fishing each day while they are, you know, out one day of the week, spending time with the family, six of them, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Well, I think you keep bringing up your wife, and I don't have a wife yet, but I, like, you know, building a family is like the de facto low time preference. So, like, and especially as, you know, we're both millennials, Nick's a zoomer, and, you know, it's like, at least I know personally in my like, life with my friends around me, you know, most of them aren't really thinking about building a family. It's just like, you know, YOLO, like, hedonistic, get your kicks right now, enjoy it in the moment. And I'll even talk to friends and I'll ask them, like, do you want children? And a lot of them are like, no, like, I don't want children. And I look at them like, man, you guys are fucking crazy. Like, how do you not want kids? And, you know, like, I definitely want kids, and I've always wanted kids. But, like, I think now I realize that I'm realizing that I'm falling into the, like, millennial camp of, like, oh, I need to, you know, be successful before I have children so that they can grow up, you know, living a good life. And maybe that is, you know, like a side effect of being a little too neurotic with the low time preference. But, like, you know, maybe speak on family as low time preference.
I can actually tell you, like, a big event for me where I was reflecting myself and feared, or actually the freedoms that, for example, the U.S. Citizens can afford, you know, was when I visited the family of my wife in L.A. 2 years ago, I think October, November, like Thanksgiving. And I was just so kind of starstruck, you know, how everyone there is just driving the newest and biggest car and is at the same time barista at Starbucks. you know, how at that point, to me, having heard of Bitcoin twice or three times, for sure, at that point, it was just so crazy, you know, like a slap in the face when you go to the city and, I mean, people are just consuming, you know, like ridiculous amounts of coffee for $8. Nothing was, you know, I've been going to America regularly, usually East Coast and Florida and stuff. But like I told Nick, I studied here in San Francisco in 2014. And, you know, I don't know if this is just the 4 years or the difference between North and South, but man, it was just a crazy amount of spending money for bullshit. Everybody had like a Tesla Model 3 at that time because it just came out, and people were just standing in the traffic on, I think, the 405 for, I don't know, 1 to 2 hours every day to get to work. And to me, it was the ultimate hamster wheel. And from that point on, man, I wanted to spend everything in sats. Like, no shit anymore. I know it was even over Black Friday. We barely spent money because I was just shocked, you know?
Yeah. I see, like, a lot of people so desperate to keep up with everyone else's spending that, you know, they want the nicest cars, they want the nicest clothes, etc. That, like, I know a bunch of people who drive BMWs, but they don't even work a job. Like, you know, they're acting like they're rich, they're acting like they're ballers, but in reality they're broke, and all these people seem to be that way. And like, the real ones with wealth, the real ones with low time preference aren't really doing that. You know, they're saving their money in sats. They're not buying, like, in I remember my senior year of high school, in all my college classes, I'd be sitting there in class, and here come literally every single girl walked in with a Starbucks coffee or something like that. So much they even had one on campus. And like, literally when you leave the class, the trash can is just full of, like, I don't even know, like maybe at least, I'm guessing at least like $50 worth of Starbucks. And it's just like, Dex just in the chat, it makes no fucking sense. Like, why? I'm not spending all that money every single day. Like, let's say even if it was just $5 a day, 5 days a week, that's $25 you're spending on coffee.
That's crazy.
I'd much rather have the sats.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to add, like, I say this all the time on here, and it's one thing that Nick told me, like, when we first started hanging out. He's like, ever since I went Bitcoin only, I sleep so much better. And while I still feel like I'm in the rat race at times, and you know, I get burnt out and I'm like, fuck, man, like, why am I doing all this shit? You know, like, basically unconsciously, you know, doing things and then reflecting on them. I'm like, god damn, like, I shouldn't have done that. Shouldn't have bought that. Like, fuck. Okay. Like, what the fuck? And so you feel like you're still caught in the rat race. But ever since you, like, become a full Bitcoin zealot, you're just like, okay, like, there is an exit route to this, you know, like, this is the way out. Just, you know, be patient, you know, build your inner strength, do what you got to do to slowly but surely adjust your behaviors and get to the place you want to be. And so, like, yeah, man, Bitcoin fixes this, or Bitcoin fixes humans. It's kind of a weird thing that software, we need, like, algorithms to make, you know, instead of the algorithms like, just turning your attention into advertising dollars, it's like Bitcoin software, the algorithms are, you know, making us almost more human in like a weird way. I don't know how to explain that.
It just doesn't turn a blind eye, no? It just doesn't act like something better. Like, while political money is acting like all virtuous and like there is no greed and politicians are nice people, you know, Bitcoin just acts like there is greed, and when everybody's looking out for his own interest, they're at the same time looking out for each other, you know?
Yeah. Wait, what were you just saying, Optimus? I was replying to someone in the chat. I wanted to say something, though. I had something I wanted to say. You're talking about.
I said like something about like getting out of the rat wheel or the rat race about being Bitcoin, and you know, like catching yourself unconsciously acting in the rat race, and then you know, like having to unplug and be, you know, like more zen about your Bitcoin purchases and or your lack of spending.
Yeah, I had something. I'm sure it'll come to me. But Dimuff and Top said it's the hamster wheel, and Bitcoin's an exit off the hamster wheel. And I really like that analogy, because in the fiat world, you can just be going in the same. You're working real hard, and it doesn't seem like there's ever any end, because there's really not. And then once you get off the hamster wheel, you can really start to maximize your effort and value and go forward.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Like Bitcoin allows you that perspective, no? That you can step out of the hamster wheel and kind of look at your cage.
Oh, I like that.
Deep. God damn, we're getting deep on it.
Yeah, but yeah, like it's a complete change and shift in mentality, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. Like a lot of people, you know, maybe on off the hamster wheel, but they have the mentality that they're on the hamster wheel, or you know, vice versa, and that could either be good or bad for you, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, I see. Like using that hamster wheel somehow in your favor, or how do you mean?
I think a lot of people have like the potential to make these small but maybe difficult changes for them, and their mentality is like we were saying earlier, like people were like, oh, you know, rich people are rich, poor people are poor, and that's the way it'll always be. And it's like, yeah, if you have that mindset, but let's say if you're poor and you have the mentality of a rich person mindset, you're already off that hamster wheel, you know, and the sky's the limit for you. But let's say if like you're on the hamster wheel and you have this mentality of I'll never be able to get off this. I'll never, you know, my life will never improve. It'll always be like this. You're going to be on that hamster wheel for the rest of your life.
It's hard to find the, I mean, Bitcoin at the same time is also a community for us to find each other and share our experiences on this journey, you know, on this low time preference journey that you usually wouldn't have if you would be just a person, like you said, that is, for example, poor, and you may realize this is a hamster wheel you're on, but you have no opportunity of exchanging with anyone, or that idea with anyone who you could reflect of, you know, like I just want to say you're a product of your environment, and that's often making it so hard for people. I have a friend that works construction, who I kind of you know, infused with some Bitcoin knowledge, and well, I think he doesn't have a nice time at work, you know.
Do you think, going back to the thing about you are a product of your environment, do you think, like, I always like that saying of like you are who your friends are, or like you are who you hang out with. And it's like, I remember when I graduated high school, I was like, I like my my degenerate friends, like they're fun to hang out with and just be stupid with, but when it comes to furthering myself and my career and my financials, you know, whenever I want to walk in a room of people, I want to be the dumbest person in the room. I want to hang out. I don't want to hang out with, or, you know, spend my time, you know, learning from a professor or a mentor who talks about being successful. I want to hang out with the people who are successful. I remember, you know, I used to during like slow nights, I would take out my phone and I would text American HODL, and I'd be like, dude, like I'd share with them my story, and I'd be like, I know you're rich as shit. I know you're successful as fuck. Tell me exactly, please tell me exactly how you got to where you are, and give me all the advice I can get, if that's cool. And he was cool with it. And we would sit down and just go over this stuff. And then, you know, having him as a connection led me to so many other more connections. And over time, it's like you get smarter, you meet better people that bring you up in life. And I think a lot of people are missing that. They're hanging around some, you know, the same losers that they've always been hanging around, and they don't ever go forward with their life.
Did you ever read Think and Grow Rich?
Yeah. I did not.
That is the book that the Rich Dad Poor Dad guy got his initial idea from. Like, he kind of, you know, grabbed it from that book. It's a little older, I think 1920-ish, from Napoleon Hill. And it's about what you kind of said in the book. He's describing how he imagines himself in a room with great people of his time, you know, like how he sees Lincoln and how Lincoln has his own character, and how he surrounds himself like with Carnegie and Richmond of the time that he thinks a lot of and had contact with, and how he thinks and taps into that unlimited intelligence to, you know, to just be listening in that room, what these people he thinks so highly of would converse about, like trying to have an idea about the problem or solve the problem that he is in front of.
Optimus, what were you going to say?
No, I wasn't going to add to that. I just was thinking that maybe we should open up the comms and see if anyone else in the room wants to add a few things.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
If I can, I just wanted to add to what Optimus was saying earlier. He's very right when he is talking about, like, when you, of course, find the right girl and getting married, you definitely start planning your future. And, like, I can say, like, our plan, like, we went to the Lightning Conference when it was in Berlin. I'm not even sure, but 2019? I think 2019, no? October? Yeah. In October 2019. And, like, before that, we already said, like, we definitely gonna wait another halving, like, at least 34, 35 before we're gonna plan to have a child, you know? Funny or not, but it all planned out well so far, you know? I wouldn't have want to be pregnant during this time now.
Well, it's funny you say that, because, like, I'm 30, so I'm a year younger than you, but, like, that, and I don't even have a prospect for a wife or whatever, but that's kind of, like, if this Bitcoin play works out like we think it will, then, you know, within 5 years to a decade, then we'll be able to be like, all right, I feel like I'll be in a good enough place to be like, okay, maybe I can start a family now. And so it's funny how we have essentially the same timeline.
Yeah.
Except you're ahead of the game.
I mean, like, yeah, you know, I get really lucky. Like, I mean, I can tell you, she was au pair over here when I met her, and, like, we got married, like, a year in, I guess. And, you know, I've been just planning everything since then together. And, yeah, I think, especially when you start to share your finances with someone, you know, and you try to work at the same end of the rope, then, like, that's the only way, you know. She sacrifices, I sacrifices, and we're going to stack that at the end of the month together, you know?
Let's go. Guess marrying a Bitcoiner or turning your wife into a Bitcoiner has some perks to it.
Definitely. I always tell her, like, I wouldn't even know how, because some, you know, Bitcoiners, especially on Twitter, be like saying, like, are you, like, Dieterbob, like, when he was just saying he installed the Cash app on his wife's phone, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about all day with your wife, you know? He's on Twitter just talking Bitcoin, and I'm like, I don't understand it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, I have that thought where it's like, okay, it'll be easier to have, like, a Bitcoiner as a wife, but I also, like, I don't know. I don't think it, personally, it'd be, like, a make or break point. It's like, I was listening to Preston Pish's, I forget what podcast episode it was, but he was saying, like, I don't bring Bitcoin up to my wife, you know, like she knows I'm into financial, you know, stuff, but like we talk about other things, you know, so I don't know if it's like necessarily make or break, as long as she knows that you're a Bitcoiner, or, you know, that Bitcoin is the way, and Bitcoin is first and foremost the way to, you know, have successful family life. But I don't know if you necessarily need to talk to your spouse about Bitcoin consistently, because I mean, it's like I'm talking to you guys all day, every day about Bitcoin, like 24/7. Maybe, I mean, I'm personally the guy that needs to unplug a little bit, so maybe I'm just the outlier, but I don't know if it's make or break.
I was going to say that. I was going to say I've thought about this before, and I'd kind of like a girl not to be in Bitcoin, so, you know, you can take a break from it, but I mean
she'd have to be down for Bitcoin, though. Like, she'd have to, like, you couldn't have, like, a Bitcoin skeptic, maybe.
Yeah, you can't have a communist girlfriend, dude.
Commie vegans are a no-go. I'll tell you that much.
That's the make or break point you're talking about.
Yeah, I agree.
But you have to share philosophy a little, like Optimus says, like, she got to be down with Bitcoin, like, open to understand it at least, or, like, not run away every time you... I mean, like, you're on your phone, she's asking you what you do, you say stacking sats, and she rolls her eyes, like, what's that, you know?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, I agree.
At this point, you at least need to share, like, a vision for the future. I mean, like, not initially, you know, but at least when you have a girlfriend that's going to be, like, wifey material, like, you're going to figure that out. If you work for the same thing, then that's the deal, I guess, at least for me.
Well, it's funny, like, we're laughing about it, but this is still all low time preference, like, thinking, you know? It's like... Ben's over here clowning me in the chat, and he's all like, "Oh, she's just got to be hot though, right?" And it's like, yeah, obviously. But it's funny when you start to think about your future and your life goals, you know, you have to think of, you know, like, where is this, you know, where is this thinking going to eventually end up with this person that I'm spending supposedly the rest of my life with? And so, you know, you kind of have to avoid the beauty as a dude, even though that's, like, all we really want. So,
I mean, they're not running around, like, with a Bitcoin symbol on their forehead, you know, like, at first she's attracting you, you know, like, that's the normal thing. But later you're going to find out if there is some brain or not. And, like, for me, there needs to be some. And I really got lucky, you know, so that's what I can say. And I understand you guys saying, she doesn't need to be, like, talking about it all the time or, like, being in Bitcoin, you know? But, you know, personally, I'm not at this Preston Pish, Ben Hunt, like, probably Pomp level of money. And I think they have a version of a life that I personally wouldn't want to have. And I personally think that they probably have a kind of a busy life, you know, where you don't see your wife maybe every night, or, like, you have, like, this town apartment where you sleep, and she lives in the house out in the Hamptons. Like, I don't know. But, I mean, I imagine they're not talking all the time. And when they're talking, they're not talking about all the assets they have to do all the time with. But they're also from a totally different world, at least than mine. So for me, it's important to have, like, the person that I'm talking the most to and that I share the most stuff with, she can understand Bitcoin at a level where it's fun to share with her, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like you want the simple stuff, which I want as well. It's like, you just want to be able to come home to your wife and talk to her as your wife, not as a business partner or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to go and start talking about all your assets and, like, you know, stuff like that. It's like just a normal person conversation.
Yeah, totally.
But Optimus, do you want to open up the chat to see what everyone else wants to say?
Yeah, I mean, unless Viking has a few more points, then yeah, let's we can open it up and see what.
No, definitely. Let's go.
All right, cool. Yeah, so guys, unmute yourself if you want to add a few cents. Caro, I see you.
Yeah, I got a question, or a few, I guess.
All right, shoot it.
So, did any of y'all ever gone through a shitcoin phase? And if so, how has that impacted your Bitcoin, journey?
Did you say shitcoin phase?
Yeah.
Blog.
I mean, yeah, I'll tell you personally, like, I got into Bitcoin the end of November 2017, so it was at the very tail end of the bull market. I saw Bitcoin go from 10K to 20K, and within that week or two of me finding Bitcoin, for the next, I don't know what it was, like 3 weeks or so, it looked like every shitcoin in the market was just going green. And so I came into the space and was instantly just thought it was normal, you know, like, oh, this is a new paradigm, everything's going green, it just seems super normal. And so it definitely got caught in it for, I don't know what it was, like 3 months or 4 months, even though the price was dropping, you know, for the tail end of all that. But it was definitely one of those things where, you know, as like a default Keynesian, you know, a very high time preference person, I came into the space and was instantly like, oh shit, I'm about to get rich. Like, this is what's up, you know, like, just put $100 or something on everything and it goes 10x. Like, let's do this forever. This is the new normal. Like, okay, this is easy. And then you realize, you know, you start to realize the connections that, oh, this is all happening because of Bitcoin and everything else is basically, you know, an affinity scam. And so you fall into those traps because you don't have the knowledge or the understanding of what everything is. And then you kind of get to the point, well, at least I did, and I know most of us did here, where you're like, okay, I need to understand Bitcoin. And so you start playing the long game where you're like, okay, I need to study Bitcoin the best so that I can understand what is going on in the space. And then after you study Bitcoin, you're like, oh, everything's pretty much trash. Like, I'm here for the money. I'm here to fix the money. You know, all this other games is just ways to take your Bitcoin. And so I think it's part of the journey for most people, because, you know, not everyone is lucky to just go straight into Bitcoin and be, you know, libertarian from the start, or be like a computer scientist from the beginning so they can understand the complexities of everything. So, like, yeah, I definitely was a shitcoiner for my first 3 months of this whole journey. And then, you know, learning my lessons, the lessons of, you know, hard knock life. And then you start to realize, like, Bitcoin's the way. And then once you finally take that commitment to learning only Bitcoin is when your journey really starts, in my opinion. So,
yeah, I think, like, it's just normal. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, man.
Oh, no, I was just going to say I agree, too.
Yeah, I think that's just normal that when you get into a new space that you make a few, like, missteps. And I feel when you happen to step into crypto, there are just so many things that can happen to you, depending on the point when you get into it. I personally also, like, had a few shit coins, like, you know, I just a few shit coins too.
Tell them about a BitFi.
Yeah, okay. Caro knows everything about me, so but I did make it. I think the worst I had was like the BitFi wallet, you know, the McAfee wallet that comes seatless.
Lord.
Yeah. The next worst scam I fell for was the CoinMine, but that thing is still running, dude. Like, it's a year in and made like 2 million sats. And then, of course, like XRP. That's the only thing my BitFi wallet ever held was XRP. Just saying.
All right. Kick him out. No.
I've been through a shitcoin phase as well. I know not too long ago, some old tweets of mine were surfaced because.
Yeah, you shitcoiner.
People looked up and they were like, oh, well, you associated Bitcoin with crypto, and it was from when I was a shitcoiner, and I just typed in, like, hashtag Litecoin, hashtag Ethereum, you know, shit like that. But it's, like, literally, like, 99% of people in the space go through a shitcoin phase, but it's just, you know, once you realize that shitcoins aren't the way, and you learn about Bitcoin, and you drop it, it's like a rebirth, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you're like, the last shitcoin goes for sad, it's just a really relieving feeling, because the more you understand about Bitcoin, the more scared you are of what you're actually holding.
It's like the 50 Shades of Wrecked.
Yeah, exactly.
It just kind of depends how wrecked you're going to become, because, I mean, it's like a game of Darwinism that you have to, like, survive in order to get to the end point. And then, you know, there's another wrecked period there where you get wrecked on Bitcoin and then you just quit, or you just hold out and then you kind of win.
Yeah. Or you just put a video on Twitter and say you got wrecked, and then you get like a lot of Bitcoin for free.
Yeah, it's like I look at my shitcoining tales of like baptism by fire. You know, like it's like I had to go through all that to get on this side and fundamentally change my behavior. And so, you know, back to like the low time preference theme of the show, it's like, you know, you gotta take your licks. Like you gotta get knocked down and keep getting up for you to want to change your behavior. And so if everything's good, then, you know, like there's no point in changing anything because everything's fine. And so until you realize that you're fucking up, then, you know, you're not going to change. And so for a lot of us, I think we have to go through that, you know, like we have to get wrecked to basically sit down and be like, okay, I need to realize what the fuck's going on, because this is an important moment in time and everyone can tell that this is like things are getting out of control, and what are the solutions. And, you know, I know a lot of my friends may not be thinking that way, but personally it's like, okay, like what's going on right now? And like, how can I assure that I survive this transition into the future? Because it seems like we're in that transition moment, and most people just don't have the solutions. But as Bitcoiners, I feel we have it. And so, you gotta make it through the pain to get to the glory.
True.
But Carl, you can go, Viking. I was just going to say, I want to hear Carl's point on the time preference, but you continue.
Yeah, go ahead, Carl. Go ahead.
Okay, so like, I mean, everybody who basically gets into Bitcoin initially started with greed. There is no such thing that you start, okay, maybe there is. It's very, very rare. You can't, there's barely anybody who starts out as educated Bitcoiner, because everybody starts out as a greedy bastard.
Facts.
And this basically results out of high time preference for earning money. And what this causes is that when people try to find ways how to make money, and they see this opportunity, you know, like, oh, I see I can fucking make money with this shit coin. And then, you know, maybe I win, maybe I lose. It's like a gamble, a casino. And then when they start, you know, digging more into it and looking into the fundamentals, basically, like the underlying technology, what it's being used for, they start getting ideologized. And then what comes up is something like they start, you know, falling out because they're thinking about it and they see the faults of the system. And that's when their little world starts, you know, breaking down, or it breaks down because they start losing a lot of money on it, because the fundamentals are no longer there. XRP is not $1 anymore, or I don't know what kind of shitcoin. So basically, then they totally lose out on this whole thing, and then start looking for other stuff, like for example, Bitcoin. And then they kind of figure out that they were buying the wrong shit all along.
Yeah.
And then basically, like, this is like how you get the most toxic Bitcoiners out of the whole game. Because, you know, when they get wrecked on shitcoins, they become the best Bitcoiners you can rely on. But it just depends, because, you know, I mean, by maybe somebody who's still shitcoining, you should be wary with them, because those who do casino, even after they are Bitcoining, have really a high chance that they're going to start shitcoining again later. Like with this shitcoiner, Martin Tan.
Oh, shit.
The Emperor.
Dang, you went there. Oh, shit.
I also lost. Can I just go ahead?
Yeah, go. I was going to sweep that under the table.
Okay.
Go like it.
I have a fourth scam I lost money to. I don't know. Weightcoin, have you heard it? It was like a Bitcoin mining pool. You were basically sending Bitcoin in and renting hash rate, and then you got like paid dividends on, like, you know, the Bitcoin you earned with the Bitcoin you invested for the mining equipment. And like, I thought I did enough research on it before sending in some stuff, you know, but turns out I didn't. And well, that was, you know, another scam I fell for that was, again, like, I told myself my fault, you know, like, Dior, do your own research. And, like, you know, I think C. Bendixson said it, the human full note, you know. Since you meet your own, like, unread library effect all the time around these scams and Bitcoin and all the people that are smarter around you, you just never stop reading and never stop self-improving, and all that is again tied to low time preference and the power of compounding, you know.
Preach, without a doubt. It's
this is interesting also, like, with what is stacking says, is it a high time preference activity? I mean, if you think about it, everything that related to economics is a big bullshit, but the whole thing is that when you are buying sets, you are taking part in a high time preference activity in order to achieve a low time preference activity.
Yeah.
Because if you are buying sets, you're spending money on something that that is, like, how would I say, a bit speculative. But in the other sense, it is something that you're trying to, you know, save money into. And then it kind of paradoxically transforms from a high time preference behavior to a low time preference behavior, because you're still saving money.
Yeah. I think Jimbo said it one time. He's like, I have a high time preference for buying Bitcoin, but a low time preference for saving those Bitcoins.
Okay, makes sense. I mean, somehow, like, how is it a high time preference activity, though? Because you're spending the money?
Well, you're spending your fiat, yeah.
Well, okay. not only just spending your fiat, but, like, needing that, you, like, needing those sats whenever you have your fiat. So it's like, you know, the instantaneous need to have to own those Bitcoins. So you're capitulating your fiat, you know, as fast as possible to buy Bitcoins. But, like, that very process is, like, a low time preference behavior, because if you're a hodler, you're holding those coins for as long as humanly possible. So it's like, I guess, the duality of the world, you know, like.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. It's for Viking and Cairo. How is it high time preference behavior when it's not really stacking sats isn't really consumption? It isn't a coffee or isn't a pizza, or it's not like the new coolest whatever you want to call it, or Lambo, if you will. But when you stack sets, you are, I guess, looking for a store of value, or you found one and that's what you're doing. You're saving, you're not really consuming. So it's more of a LTP than an HTP, in my opinion. But
I was just about to say the same thing. I was just gonna say, like, you're not really spending it. You're just transforming it to another form to, you know, store your value.
Well, that's the end result, basically. because there's an activity, there's a process that goes down that transfers into high, I mean, to low time preference, you see?
But, like, the way I
think it's a bit paradoxical, okay. Because...
Well, I have a question, Kyle. Yeah, would you mind defining a high time preference behavior?
How basically, you're trying to, it's the Mises definition, basically, that you are right now demanding satisfaction for some given goods or service, and you're spending your money in order to acquire that.
Goods and services.
Without deferring. So, like, if you understand what I mean, right?
Right, but if you, in what you just said, you said goods and services, correct?
Yeah.
Well, does Bitcoin or stacking sats fall into that category?
Yeah, you're still spending your money, basically, what you're earning.
Okay. That I'm not being confrontational. I'm just curious.
No, it's okay.
To understand.
It's totally understandable that, like, it doesn't make sense, because in the end, it always low time preference activity, because it transforms into that after you acquire the Bitcoin immediately.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just.
You could go, Viking. I was just going to say, like, I was kind of confused when I first heard the concept as well. And even though Bitcoin, like buying Bitcoin, is the low time preference behavior, I think the way that at least my buddy Jimbo always put it is like, we want these sats as soon as we can. So, you know, it's a high time preference behavior because, like Kara was saying, it's satisfying that need to own those Bitcoins. And so we basically, you know, give away our dollars as quickly as possible to own as much Bitcoin as possible, because we know what the future will bring for Bitcoin if it happens like we want it or we believe it will. And so we have that high time preference to own as much Bitcoin as soon as possible, even though that owning Bitcoin in and of itself is a low time preference behavior.
Correct.
Well, can you really own Bitcoin?
Ooh, are we going there?
What? Well, if you earn Bitcoin, that's already a low time preference activity.
I can you really ever own Bitcoin was the question. So,
well, we just hold on to these keys and we hold them and we watch over them for the next generation,
right?
But I mean, yeah, I kind of look at it like I own these UTXOs, even though, you know, they're just, I guess, you know, inputs and outputs on the network that I technically don't own, I suppose, but
kind of how we said in the beginning, or what I mentioned in the beginning, that Bitcoin is the closest thing, I think, asset, commodity, currency, however you want it, that you own the closest, you know, because it's like an extension of you, because it does what you want it to do at the time you want it to do that, how you wanted to do that, to whom you wanted to do that, you know? It's like your arm. You think about lifting it, and it lifts, and, you know? And if you want to spend your Bitcoin, you spend the Bitcoin the way you set it up. There's no other thing as close as Bitcoin comes to owning something other than your own time and your body. It's the perfect extension.
I got a question.
Shoot it.
Go for it.
All right. So let's say hypothetically, I sell cookies, right? And my customers, they pay me through Cash App, right? But, you know, this is hypothetical, right? I don't want to get tracked by, you know, the feds, right?
Yeah.
And how would that work with Bitcoin? Because I know you can buy Bitcoin through Cash App, right? But then they have to buy Bitcoin through Cash App, right? And then they have to send the Bitcoin to a wallet. Right, to a wallet address, right? Is there a way to increase your privacy in that regard?
Yeah, there are plenty ways. But you directly want to know about, like, when they bought it a Cash App, because it's the most convenient for your customers?
Exactly.
What?
I personally don't have an experience with Cash App and stuff, but you know, because you have to, like, you like you said, you're gonna get them into another wallet, and if you want to do it right there on the phone, I don't know if you're using iOS or Android, but I think Green Wallet is on both. But technically, technically you would have to do either like what I would say coin joins or use some side chain, and like I think that's all kind of hard to achieve on the spot, if that's your question.
Right.
What did, okay. What did you say, Optimist?
I mean, I was just going to ask, like, are they sending those coins, like, through Cash App to you, or they're sending it, like, from an exchange to your wallet?
No, from Cash App to a wallet address.
Okay, so, I mean, technically, those coins would be KYC'd, but they're going to unknown addresses. So, as long as you aren't connecting those UTXOs, those Bitcoins, to your identity, and they're just being held on wallets, then, you know, you can do what Viking said and you send them to like a coin join, or maybe you don't really even care about the fact that, you know, your customer was KYC'd, and so you just keep sending those to other hops, and then at a certain point the heuristics break where, you know, after 6, 7, 8, 10 hops, like, who's to say who actually owns those Bitcoins? So, like, I don't think, and you know, I could be wrong, and you know, when I think about this, but personally, if people send me Bitcoins, I really don't care where they come from. Like, if they're KYC'd or if they're not, you know, I'll take all Bitcoins. You know, all UTXOs to me are fungible. Like, give me the Bitcoins, and then I'll figure it out after the fact. But, like, I definitely would probably recommend to do some kind of coin joining, or maybe just, you know, keeping those coins separate from your KYC stack, so you wouldn't want to merge UTXOs that are linked to your name to the ones coming from your customers. And so, you know, there's different ways to go about it, but if you were to do something like that, then maybe just set up like a BTC Pay server, and, you know, keep those coins separately, and just, you know, mark all the UTXOs and label your coins specifically, so you know what's what and where they came from.
Okay, yeah, because I heard that I think Wasabi wallets, they use coin integration, so I'm guessing that's similar to CoinJoin.
I'm not so sure about that. What we just talked about it on the side. I don't know if you see it about that you could be using Lightning. You know, if you want to increase the privacy of your customers and your own, you could be trying to use, for example, Blue Wallet as a custodial Lightning wallet and use some of their Lightning nodes. So you could, like, you know, like transfer some Bitcoin to Blue Wallet from Cash App, and then you basically load up you create a Lightning wallet. You can have multiple wallets in Blue Wallet, you know, Lightning wallet.
But that's not really private.
Well, it's not really private, but opening just that Lightning channel and using it would be at least reducing the transactions, no? Like, on the main chain. So
not really.
I feel like I feel different about that. I think your privacy should increase because...
If you use something like Breeze, for example, that will be more private, of course.
Yeah, why not Blue Wallet? It's the same.
Yeah, but I mean, okay.
Well, Blue Wallet's custodial Lightning, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so Breeze is like setting up the node on your phone?
Yeah. No, it's basically, it's a non-custodial wallet that uses Neutrino in order to handle
Breeze.
And everything.
Yeah, yes, I mean, Breeze. With Breeze, it'd probably work the
or
way.
Or Phoenix, yeah.
But here, let's ask Ben. If Ben's on the line, Ben's the most technical one here. What would you do?
Yeah, here's the Breeze. Like, if you're running your own Lightning node, but you're not, like, making a permanent mark on the chains to show that, like, you know, you did sell cookies or whatever. But also, like, if you do want to do it on-chain, like, it's very well just, like, send it to your own wallet, mix it with like Wasabi or Samurai, as long as you're doing it correctly, and then spend it, and should be safe as well there.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
I think on iOS, just the guys from Wasabi released also the new app, Chain Case. No, it's the Chain Case app that's mobile, yeah. Whirlpool of Wasabi, basically.
Yeah, it's like mobile Wasabi on iOS. It's pretty nice. It's still in like heavy beta, but you can mix with it on mobile, which is very nice.
So, does anyone have any more questions for Viking about load time preference?
Or comments?
Did you get rid of ReXRP?
Man, everything long gone. I told you about like the boomer I was helping.
I'm just joking.
I told Nick about it too. Fed really good, helping people out of their shit coins. It's like really, you know, it's paying what you do. It's nice.
All right. Well, I think we're getting to that point where we'll wrap up this episode. But Viking, you have any last words on load time preference that you'd want, you know, someone brave enough to make it through this hour listening to us rant?
I think load time preference is highly underrated, and most of us that follow something, no matter if it's like your career, your dream body, the dream of a full pocket or something, we all make sacrifices, and these sacrifices, like well thought of, are actually how you compound yourself into a better future. That's what I would say about load time preference.
I think that was a good little wrap up. Yeah, I just want to add, the way I usually think about load time preference is, you know, like quit sacrificing your future self for your current present, you know, obnoxious desires. It's like, you know, you're cutting the future you down short because you can't discipline certain aspects of your behavior. And so if you can just rein it in, get a little stoic discipline going on in your life, you know, we've been saying, and I've been saying forever, like find that Bitcoin Zen where you realize that Bitcoin is the thing you want to own for a better future. And so, you know, think about future you. What's future you going to be happier with? You know, buying a little Bitcoin, or, you know, going out and partying with your friends, or eating at Snickers bars. And I'm using those examples because those are literally what I do. So, you know, putting myself accountable here. But yeah, your future self deserves, you know, these sats as much as you think your present self does. So love yourself a little more, people.
Cool. Yeah.
Nick, you want to wrap us up?
Sure. I don't really have any closing words to say. I think you guys said it perfectly, but I just want to thank Viking for coming out and doing this with us. I know we had to plan around our normal Wednesday because of the time zone differences. And yeah, I think this was a really good rip. We got some people coming out, joining us in the chat. Yeah, really glad we did this today.
Yes,
exit the hamster wheel, as D-Muffin Top says.
Thank you guys for having me again. It was really great. I hope some like listeners later on like will catch on to low time preference, go down like this rabbit hole, you know, and find themselves some more sats.
Let's go. All right, guys, stay humble, stack sats, and we'll see you next week. This is episode 26, I believe, and we'll be back on Wednesday to do Teacher's Lounge. And then, yeah, we'll be back every week. All right, peace out, guys.
Peace.